I'm going to introduce my guest tonight. He's a very, very interesting guy. I've known him for many, many years. Someone who's been interested in the UFO phenomena as I have as well. And somebody who has seen a lot of the action and been there with a lot of the real infamous cases. And you will recognize him most probably contemporarily by the movie Fire in the Sky, Intruders, which was a CBS miniseries that aired a few years ago. And, of course, the Sci-Fi Channel's hit Sliders. And it's my pleasure to welcome to the program tonight Tracy Torme. Good evening, Tracy.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing great, and thanks for being on the program tonight.
You're very welcome. So Hitler is not only alive, but he's living in Illinois.
He's in Illinois.
It's really interesting.
Among other places, of course.
All places for him to end up, Illinois. That's kind of interesting.
I know, really. Isn't that something? That might be why they had that big snowstorm out there in Chicago a couple of days ago.
March and Skokie, I guess.
Makes sense. Okay. Now, let's start off by talking about your background.
Uh-huh.
You've been in really interested in the UFO phenomena for many, many years.
Uh-huh.
I met you through the early days of Paranet. You were looking at one of the cases that made a lot of headlines, and that was the Gulf Breeze, Florida case.
Okay.
Tell us a little bit about your background, how you got interested in the subject, and kind of take us up to the present day.
Well, it really started for me when I was very small. My mom brought home a Look magazine that was devoted entirely to UFOs, and even at that early age, I was really fascinated by it. I thought, you know, say if even one of these photos ends up being real, you know, imagine what you're
right.
looking at. And I was hooked from there on in, but I was also very wary of the subject because I knew even from an early age that a lot of people, if you mention UFOs, they think, you know, you're some kind of crackpot. So
right.
it was kind of a closet hobby for me, basically. And I read, you know, some of the books. And then it really wasn't until I was, you know, sort of out in the world and done with college and realized, you know, that I was going to hopefully, you know, make films and TV and stuff that I started to incorporate it into my career. And very early on, I became sort of a confidant of Bud Hopkins as well as the guy Bill Moore that did all the Roswell stuff. So I kind of zeroed in on Roswell and abductions way back when. Those are the two areas that I was the most interested in, kind of before they became fashionable in a way.
Right.
And then later, Jacques Vallée became a good friend of mine, and that was great because he's such an interesting guy, and so I learned a lot from him. And finally, Gulf Breeze, I guess. It wasn't so much that I was interested in Gulf Breeze. I worked on that horrible documentary UFO Cover-Up Live, and I was doing the Gulf Breeze segment. That was my segment. So I flew down to Gulf Breeze about five or six times and spent quite a bit of time with Ed Walters, and that's how I got involved with that one.
Okay. Well, let's join me tonight. Is Tracy Torme, who is a screenwriter and producer, and someone who has quite a background in the UFO phenomena research area. And anyway, Tracy, back to what we were talking about. You basically got involved in this subject at an early age, and I'm curious. What is your after all these years of looking at it? What is your conclusions, or do you have any?
Well, I liked what you said on your ad about being skeptical believers.
Yeah.
And that's what I think that I am, too.
Yeah.
More and more skeptical as I go along. There's less and less that I believe in. But I do believe that at the core of this, there's a very real phenomena, and I think there is hard evidence for it. There may not be the smoking gun, the proverbial
right.
smoking gun, but there is a real phenomena. It's very hard to define. It's very elusive. I think there's a conspiracy involved in keeping it from the public, but I think it's a very, very tiny conspiracy. I think that, you know, for the most part, the Air Force, the Pentagon, most governments of the world are not interested in UFOs and don't believe in UFOs. And I think that the truth is somewhere hidden at another level. And I think the reason they've been able to keep the secret, quote-unquote, is because I don't think even the powers that be really have a great handle on what is behind the phenomena. I think the phenomena is so mysterious and hard to define that I think it's self-perpetuating as far as being able to keep the secret going.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure. Sure, I do.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of kooks and crackpots that get involved in this, of course, too, that muddy the waters and cause a lot of problems.
Yeah, I think like a guy like Art Bell, you know, does a lot of damage.
I agree.
Yeah.
Listen, I wanted to ask you. Now, let's kind of go back to the early days when you kind of got involved in it, because that was, for me, I was kind of a greenhorn or a virgin, if you will, mm-hmm. when I got started in this stuff. And one of the things that I noticed was it seemed like when I joined into this whole thing, things were starting to take kind of a turn. I know you mentioned Bill Moore. You mentioned UFO Cover-Up Live and those kinds of things.
Uh-huh.
Some people believe that the MJ-12 controversy, people are sharply divided on whether or not that represents a real group or if that is disinformation.
Uh-huh.
How did MJ-12 get introduced into the mixture?
Well, I was kind of aware of the MJ-12 thing before the public was, again, because of my relationship with Bill, and I knew some of the stuff that was going on there. And, you know, ultimately, I think there was some truth in MJ-12, but overall, I think it's a hoax. I don't believe it's a hoax that Bill perpetrated, which some people do think. I think it was perpetrated on him.
Right.
And I think, you know, again, that it's very close to the truth. It's close enough to the truth that, you know, it keeps people running in circles for quite a while. Probably, you know, I think there's somebody out there who does this type of thing periodically, you know, mm-hmm. whether it's the alien autopsy film, I'm not sure if that falls into the category, but various times they come forward with things that are tantalizing and that I think send people off down the garden path, you know, to keep people sort of off track. And I think MJ-12 kind of falls into that category.
So you think that's by design?
I really do, because I think it just happens too frequently, and it's too elaborate and too time-consuming and probably too expensive, you know, in mm-hmm. some ways. Some of these stories that come out that mislead, it seems like there's a pretty purposeful, you know, group behind it. It's not just somebody, one guy doing it for kicks or something like that. Mm. Whoever did MJ-12 obviously went to a lot of trouble to
put that stuff together.
Yeah, and to make it look real and to pick all of these somewhat obscure dead guys who then when you look them up, they do have a sort of logical connection to who would have been chosen for a group like this.
Right.
So obviously it took some time and effort, and why? You know, what's the purpose of it? Nobody, I think, got rich off of it. So I think the purpose, again, is just to kind of like muddy the waters.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you mentioned earlier, you said something about that you think the conspiracy or the group that perpetrates the conspiracy is very small.
Yeah.
Who do you think they are? What do they represent? A political agenda? What kind of people are we possibly dealing with here?
Well, I think if Roswell was real, I think that when Roswell was said and done, they knew they had something in their hands that, you know, wasn't American and wasn't Russian. But they didn't really know what it was. They didn't know how it flew. It's kind of like the equivalent of you put a toaster, you know, back 10,000 years ago, and you put it in the hands of some wise people in 8,000 BC, and you say, okay, take this toaster apart and tell me what it does, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there's no place to plug it in to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So what would they make of it? I kind of think that that's what happened with the Roswell crash. I think that they ultimately knew they had some material that was very strange, and they had possibly some bodies. I don't know. I'm you know, 50-50 on that at best. But whatever they had, they knew it wasn't from here. And I think when all was said and done, they really didn't know what they had. I mean, I think they had something. They couldn't recreate it. They couldn't make it fly. They couldn't tell you why it was here. And I think that they assumed that, you know, this mystery would be solved fairly soon. So therefore, the group that was involved probably stayed together. But I think that 50 years later, they haven't solved it. And I think that that's one of the reasons why, again, that it's such a small conspiracy and why it's so successful, is because it doesn't involve, you know, Kissinger and Nixon and the Pentagon and the Air Force. A lot of people on you know, Mike, on our side of the fence, they believe in this giant conspiracy and the whole world, you know, of intelligence and military really knows what's going on. And I think that's just such utter nonsense. It doesn't fit anything that we know. It doesn't fit people's behavior at all. The behavior really of the government and of the mainstream media is that there's no such thing. And I think the reason is because those that know that it's real, you know, they have a very tiny little mystery in a box that hardly anybody else, you know, knows about, and that there are really no, you know, totally clear answers to.
Do you think that they have any kind of an agenda as far as, you know, one of the things that has always concerned me about the possibility that something of that magnitude is held by a small group of people? What could the future possibly be for that? Suppose they finally unlocked Pandora's box and they discovered the ways to perhaps control the technology. do you think that these people would make it accessible to the public in good ways, or would they be tempted to possibly use it for, you know, dark, nefarious things?
Well, I think a lot of people will disagree with me, but I believe it would come out to the public by just osmosis, not that they would say, okay, let's tell everyone. I think if the mystery was really solved the way that a lot of people like to tell you they are, you know, whenever anyone tells you, well, there's seven alien races coming here, and here's why they're here, and they're
right.
building spaceships with the government in Nevada or whatever,
mm-hmm.
I just believe the way things work, that story would just start to leak and leak and leak like wildfire. And pretty soon some reputable, you know, journalist would get wind of it and get interested in it, and somebody would break it, and it would eventually come out. And the fact that it hasn't tells me that those stories are probably spurious.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably not. I really suspect that Area 51 has nothing to do with UFOs. I think it's, you know, it's military technology, and they've kind of used the cover of alien technology in a way, again, to muddy the waters.
Yeah. So
that's what I really think. It's a little depressing, because it'd be nicer to think that there's, you know, this great secret that's about to be revealed to all of us. I know you and I would both love to know what's behind it.
I want to know. Absolutely.
The feeling we'll still be talking about this 10 or 15 years from now and not be much closer.
Well into the future.
Yeah.
Our guest is Tracy Torme. He's joining us from Beverly Hills, California tonight. And, of course, Tracy is a screenwriter and producer of many, many interesting films and television series. And we're talking to him tonight about his interest in the subject of UFOs and some of the research that he's done over the years. Tracy, before we get on to the next topic I want to talk about, which is abductions, let's take a call, okay?
Sure.
All right. We've got David calling in, listening in on our affiliate KCMO in Kansas City. Good evening.
Yes, good evening, Michael.
Hi, David.
Hi there. How you doing?
Is this the David?
Yeah, this is the David.
Oh, okay, go ahead, David.
I wonder if you're familiar. Sorry, my voice is a little hoarse.
That's okay.
I wonder if you're familiar with a former executive assistant to the CIA named Victor Marchetti.
Yes.
All right. I have a quote from him, and I thought maybe it might be interesting. It's really brief.
Okay, go ahead.
He said, "We have indeed been contacted and visited by extraterrestrial beings. The U.S. government, in collusion with the other national powers of the Earth, are determined to keep this information from the general public. The purpose of this international conspiracy is to maintain a workable stability among the nations of the world, and for them in turn to retain institutional control over their respective populations. Thus, for these governments to admit that there are beings from outer space with mentalities and technological capabilities obviously far superior to ours, could, once fully perceived by the average person, erode the foundations of the Earth's traditional power structure, political and legal systems, religions, economic and social institutions could all become meaningless in the mind of the public." I'm almost done here. It says, "The national oligarchy establishments, even civilization as we know it, could collapse into anarchy. Such extreme conclusions are not necessarily valid, but they do probably accurately reflect the fears of the ruling classes of the major nations, whose leaders, particularly those in the intelligence business, have always advocated excessive governmental secrecy as being necessary to preserve national security." Now, I think that probably sums up the UFO enigma in a nutshell.
Now, let me ask you real quick before we go much further with this. Where is that taken from?
That's taken from a book by Timothy Good. He's Britain's leading UFO researcher.
Right, okay.
The book is called Above Top Secret.
Okay, now, does it...
The UFO, the worldwide UFO cover-up.
Now, I'm just curious. The reason I'm asking that is because I've had Victor Marchetti on the program.
Oh, you have?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know you had.
Yeah, about a year ago, I think it was. Maybe a little longer than that.
And what did he have to say?
Well, Marchetti kind of said that we kind of asked him about the alien question. He said, you know, there's just nothing there. He made no comments about it, said that there was no aliens or that there, you know, there wasn't there.
Well, consider the sources with the CIA.
Well, no,
he tell you the truth about anything?
He hates the CIA.
Well, he does. Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he left the agency because of what he perceived to be some improprieties years and years and years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, that book that he wrote, The Cult of Intelligence? Is that the book? Tracy, do you know?
No, I haven't read that one.
Can I dive in on that?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
I'd just like to say, though, that the what you really got to do if you believe in a conspiracy like that is you really have to take a step back and ask yourself how it would work. So I would ask you, if such a thing existed, All the nations of the world, or just the power brokers of the world, have gotten together to decide to keep this from everybody? Is that the basic idea behind it?
Gentlemen, I think it's obvious. The universe is teeming with life. There is life everywhere.
No question.
There's no question about it. Some of them visit us. I mean, we have the Greys from Zeta Reticuli. We have the Pleiadians from the Seven Sisters, or the Pleiades. We know that we are not alone. It is not a big secret anymore. And I think that it's apparent that we need to recognize our role in the universe. And that means it's multidimensional.
Well, what role would that be?
Well, that role is that we are the ancestors of ancient space visitors that came to this planet and left some of us behind. That's where we came from. That's why we have blacks. That's why we have the Asians.
Now, see, this
That's
is where,
why we have the Caucasians.
Yeah, and this is where you and I start to diverge. I mean, we don't agree because, number one, we don't know that we have Zeta Reticulans and Reptilians and all of that. I mean, I will go so far as to say there. But we don't know all this. And now you're saying that, you know, we're...
I'm saying we do know.
We don't know.
We do know.
How do you know that?
There's no proof.
How do I know that? Well, I mean, I've studied this as well as you have.
Huh?
And I know that there's no other explanation for all the races on this planet other than the fact that we were planted here by people from other areas of the galaxy.
But let's talk about this. There's two separate things that you're talking about, and I want to say I totally agree with you on the first part. I mean, I think the universe is almost certainly teeming with life. And I think that there's a very excellent chance that some of that life has visited here or maybe continues to visit here. All I'm saying to you, though, is be careful when you buy into these large conspiracies because human nature...
Conspiracy?
What's that?
Conspiracy?
The conspiracy?
I think it's a consensus, don't you?
No.
Well, you said originally that the nations of the world and the power elite have banded together to keep this knowledge from coming out to people because of the...
Yes, because they want to acquire the technology. There's a big race among the nations of the world, of this world, to acquire the technology, namely anti-gravitics, electromagnetics. That's why they covered up the Roswell crash.
Okay, but David...
go ahead.
Hear me out for a second. If such a thing exists, that means what's to stop one nation, okay, from breaking from that, coming forward, saying, you know what, we're not going to go along with the power elite and all the other nations. Here are the facts. Here's what's going on here. Here's what the U.S. government is secretly doing.
Now, the problem with Brazil is one of those nations. Brazil has openly admitted that they're being inundated by extraterrestrial tentacles.
Well, if Brazil has done that, that's a very different thing from saying we know who's here and we know what they're doing. And
they do know who's here.
They're not saying that.
They're not saying that. What I'm saying to you is... If what's to stop other guys like Marchetti from coming forward, if he really did say all of that, and saying this? In other words, the problem with all due respect, the problem with these kind of theories are...
It's not a theory, it's a fact.
The world doesn't work that way. The world does not work in a way where a bunch of people get together and keep the biggest secret in history and they all keep it perfectly from all the rest of us. It just doesn't happen.
Well,
I have to...
because they've terrified everybody with death threats.
Yeah, but wait, David, again.
Marchetti apparently said this in Timothy Good's book, which is about 10 years old. Has anyone killed Marchetti in the last 10 years?
No.
Well, not to my knowledge, no.
He's still there.
I guess no one killed him, and there was no one terrified him into silence.
Well,
you have to be consistent with it. That's all I'm saying.
Do you remember Jesse Marcel, the intelligence officer at the Roswell Army Air Base?
Absolutely.
On his deathbed, he told the whole story about the Greys, which are the ones from Zeta Reticuli. He told everything he knew, and it was all it's all recorded. I mean, I have a tape of him telling his story, and this man wouldn't say because he was afraid they were going to kill him if he told the truth.
Okay, David, we're out of time. Thanks. And, Tracy, before we go into the abduction section of the talk I wanted to have tonight, what do we do with the... You know, David is David's called here many times before and at times has even accused me of being a government disinformation guy and on the payroll of the CIA, which is... something I've heard many times. I'm sure you've heard that, too.
On to you, I guess.
What do we do with this? I mean, you know...
There's a pseudo-religious, almost like religious zealot type belief that a lot of people have about this stuff, and it's like trying to argue with a Christian about Jesus or anything else. It goes right at the heart of their belief systems, and, you know, logic kind of goes out the window. That's my experience. And, you know, there's just, what can you do? I mean, to each his own, and everyone has their own theory, and every theory, I guess, is as likely as the next one. But I find with people like that that they don't really want to stop and look at their theories, you know, in the light of day. Like he said, Jesse Marcel said all this stuff about the Greys and stuff on his deathbed. Well, you know how many books have been written about Roswell.
Right.
And you know how many people want to break Roswell. And what I would say is, why does David know this and nobody who wants to write that in a book know it? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense that David has that knowledge and no one else does.
Absolutely. And the other thing, too, is that what constitutes proof for these people is not proof.
There you go. Exactly.
I mean, we got to have a consensus here. We don't have that.
Well, the one of the few things I agree with Carl Sagan about was he said, I think, what extraordinary claims need extraordinary proof. I'm paraphrasing, but that's pretty true.
Yeah, it is.
To say something that's that out there, you really need something to back it up other than like somebody's tall tale or something like that.
I mean, it could all be true. I mean, we're not saying that it's not, but we're just saying that there's not proof of this yet.
Absolutely.
Now, let's move to the abduction arena. You've been involved with the abduction research.
Uh-huh.
Tell us a little bit about what you've observed and what abductions or what they possibly mean.
Well, you know, I was very involved in it in the early going. Hopkins and I did 3 hours on the Larry King show, radio show, way back when, before most people knew about this stuff. And what kind of happened was once Whitley Strieber wrote his book, and then that movie came out, and then, you know, Fire in the Sky and Intruders came out, and then the X-Files has been diving into abductions, I've lost interest in it because the contamination factor now is so huge. In those days, you know, you'd meet these people, and Hopkins was just learning all of this stuff. You know, he was on the cutting edge of this stuff. So these people would come in, the housewife, the policeman, the golf pro, whatever, people who knew nothing about this. And they would all tell this very, very similar and chilling story, you
mm-hmm.
know, and it was really kind of a horror story, to be really honest with you. But now the problem is that there's been so much written and filmed about it that I just believe you can't successfully separate the wheat from the chaff anymore. You just don't know that somebody hasn't seen a movie, read an article, even, you know, subconsciously
right.
has taken some of this in.
Now,
So I'm really not following it anymore because I just kind of think we learned what we could learn, and now you just can't really know that somebody is legitimate.
That's a big problem.
Yeah, I do too.
When you say the contamination factor, obviously you're talking about this particular thing with the media and that type of thing happening, with the way that this stuff has been just so permeated in the culture.
Well, Mike, you know, here's an interesting way to look at it. If you ask somebody 10 or 15 years ago what an alien looked like, you probably get 100 different answers from 100 different people, or, you know, you get a little green man or whatever.
Right.
Now, if you ask anyone what an alien looks like, what percentage of the population draws a little gray guy with a big head and big black eyes?
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, it's really crept into, you know, part of the culture. It's a piece of Americana now. And I think because those beings have been seen, and those are probably very legitimate beings, and they do exist. So it's not like it's a fictional or anything like that. But it just shows you, though, how much people now accept the idea of, you know, the possibility of abductions. I can tell you in the early days with Hopkins, the stuff that was coming out was so phenomenal. I mean, I really used to feel like I was living in the Twilight Zone or, you know, the Outer Limits or something. You know, when I would come out of his place in Greenwich Village, and I would just be in a daze because I was there for the Kathy Davis sessions from the book Intruders when I guess she first started seeing these quote-unquote hybrids, et cetera. And, man, I just thought this stuff is just – Rod Serling couldn't have cooked this stuff up.
Yeah.
Yet it really had an air of reality to it, and that's what was astonishing. And I do believe that abductions do exist. And I do believe that some abductions are real, but I also believe that now it's gotten too big for its own good, and I don't believe what Bud believes, which is that there are millions and millions of abductees. I don't go that far.
You think there's a much smaller number?
Yeah, I really do.
Tell us, you had some very close contact with Travis Walton in working on Fire in the Sky. Tell us about Travis. What kind of guy was he?
Travis is a really interesting guy. He's very, very bright. And he's a very insular type of guy. He's very, you know, sort of a introspective guy. He was wounded badly by the whole incident. And when I met him, he was still coming out of that. He came back to a world that had been turned upside down. You know, he had a big split with his family or his brother over this incident. He had a big split with his best friend who drove off and left him in the woods. He had all these people staring at him thinking he was a goofball or a liar or a hoaxer or a psychotic or whatever. And all of that stuff really affected him heavily. And I really believe in the last 10 years, he's come out of that and is much more at ease with the whole experience.
Have you? Do you still have contact with him?
Yes, I do stay in touch with him.
Tell me, how has, I guess, what's changed about him? Has he been able to remember any more of his experience?
I believe he does remember a bit more of his experience. We've talked about when we get together that he's going to talk to me about it. It's not something he's gone public with.
Uh-huh.
But I'd say the way he's changed, Mike, to answer you, is he used to feel like very sort of bitter, I think, at the world and the way he was treated and the fact that he knew that this was a real experience and people doubted him. Now I think he's much more philosophical about it. I think he's been able to open his eyes and understand why people would disbelieve him. He's able to be a bit rational about some of the mistakes that were made in the case that made him look bad at times or whatever. I just think he's more calm and level-headed and more forgiving in a lot of ways than he used to be about it.
What would be, you know, 10 years later, however, let's see, this has been longer than that. It's been 20-some years.
20 years, yeah.
Has he come to any kind of an understanding about what happened?
No, I think that, you know, the thing about the Walton experience is it was like a hit-and-run accident. It was not an abduction. It's not an abduction that fits any of the other patterns. I think it was just a very rare occurrence where they were in the wrong place at the wrong time and something accidentally happened to him. And I don't think that they're ever going to find, you know, some great answer to it.
Right.
I think that it is what it is. And, you know, it unfortunately, Mike, for those of us who are, the believers, quote unquote, it was a great chance to, you know, they made mistakes on this case, okay, whoever they are.
Right.
And it was a great chance to actually, you know, bring down a little bit of that curtain of secrecy. And unfortunately, it was kind of botched. And so therefore, it spiraled out of control and became, there are a lot of myths about the Walton case and a lot of people who don't believe in it for, you know, for the wrong reasons, really, to tell you the truth.
Yeah. Okay, let's take a call real quick. We've got Howard listening in on our affiliate in Kansas City, KCMO. Good evening, Howard.
Good evening.
Hi.
My question is, I've heard these stories about, you know, like Whitley Strieber wrote that he woke up in the middle of the night and he couldn't move and then he saw all these little guys.
Right.
Well, I woke up in the middle of the evening one time, and I was convinced I wasn't alone, okay?
Uh-huh.
I didn't see nothing, but I couldn't move. I couldn't move my arms, couldn't move my legs. Only thing I could do was turn my head a little bit.
Yeah.
And I fought and forced myself to move, and it took me probably 5-6 minutes in order to be able to move. Now, I was wondering if there's any physical condition that causes something like that, or, you know, because I didn't see anything. I've always believed that there's stuff out there, but, you know,
okay.
I live in the middle of a downtown major metropolitan city. How could they get at me in a place like that?
Okay, Howard, I'm going to drop you, drop the call. We're out of time, and I'm going to have Tracy comment on it, and thanks for calling.
Well,
okay?
I appreciate it.
Thank you. Tracy, go ahead.
Yeah, that's called a hypnagogic state, and that is something we all, most of us experience at some point or another. That probably has nothing to do with an abduction.
Does that happen with abductions, Tracy?
Well, it certainly does happen with abductions. I mean, paralysis is a big, big part of it, but I've had hypnagogic states, too, and probably most people have, although you might not remember it when you wake up in the morning. And that is a condition where, you know, you feel paralyzed, you can't move your body, you know you're awake. You might have the sense there's somebody else in the room. Chances are that's not an abduction. Chances are that's just a natural sleep state that we all enter into at some point or another.
Okay. That's it for us for the first hour tonight, National Hour. Tracy, I want to thank you for joining me. And until next week, I'm Michael Corbin telling you to keep your eyes on the skies. Good night.